Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. We don't run away from it. We accept it. That's on us.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA, your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
For me to be here in the NBA organization, such a historic organization, the Chicago Bulls, so it's just a dream come true for me.
Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
This is going to be a process. You'll snap your fingers and it all happens at once, but that's the plan moving forward.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day. Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Matt Peck, Bulls writer of FanRag Sports and LockedOnBulls.com, and host of the 312 on 1590 WCGO. Follow us on social media on Twitter at Bulls_Peck, at Jordan C. Malley, and at LockedOnBulls. Like us on Facebook at Facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you'll find us. Make sure to follow the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. Matt Peck here holding down the fort with a solo show today. On today's Locked On Bulls, we'll take a look at last night's two playoff games, the Rockets and the Jazz, each taking commanding 3-1 leads in their first round series. Plus, we've got two ex-Bulls in these playoffs that we haven't really touched on yet, as we've talked about Nico and Rondo in New Orleans and Wade in Miami, Derrick Rose and Jimmy Butler, and their Minnesota Timberwolves losing after a onslaught from the Rockets and James Harden in the third quarter last night. But here's the interesting thing. Derrick Rose and Jimmy Butler have both come up recently in separate columns, one from a Bulls blog and one from Chicago Sun-Times' Joe Cowley in recent days, regarding possible returns to the Bulls. We'll talk about that. Reminder, you can send voicemails and texts to our phone line at 331-979-1369. We'll be doing another fresh mailbag episode tomorrow. That's Wednesday. So be sure to get in all of your questions and comments to our text line. You can text us or leave us a voicemail, 331-979-1369. So with that, let's talk about these two playoff games that we got last night. On Sunday, we saw a lot of first-round playoff matchups getting equalized at 2-2. Neither the Wolves nor the Oklahoma City Thunder were capable of doing so last night. Let's first touch on this nightcap from yesterday, the Jazz and OKC game. Obviously, everybody was talking about the comments Russell Westbrook made after Ricky Rubio's dominant performance in Game 3 that led the Jazz taking that 2-1 lead, saying, "I'm going to shut that bleep down. Don't worry about that," when it came to Rubio's dominant offensive performance, which we really don't see that frequently from Rubio. And you could tell right from the get-go that Westbrook was trying to make a point of it, that after all of the hype and all of the talk about, you know, "I guarantee you that Rubio's not going to go off and have another triple-double night," he was aggressive defensively and sometimes over-aggressive defensively, and that led to him entering halftime with 4 fouls. And then a lot of what the Thunder were trying to do in the third and fourth quarters to mask Russell Westbrook on the defensive end, because they were trying to prevent him from picking up that 5th foul, the Utah Jazz saw right through that. And they executed brilliantly. Quinn Snyder out-coaching Billy Donovan in this one. And you had the most exciting new story in the NBA after last night, Joe Ingles going absolutely nuts, antagonizing Paul George on the defensive end, dropping 20 points offensively. He started the night cold. I think he missed his first 3 or 4 shots that were wide open looks, but he said after the game that his teammates were continuously giving him votes of confidence to shoot the ball, keep shooting those open looks, and they eventually started falling for Joe Ingles. And of course, you know, the the bigs, Derek Favors and Rudy Gobert, doing their thing, contributing on both ends of the floor. And this was a dominant, convincing win from the Utah Jazz. It's kind of crazy to think that even though this is a 4-5 series, most people probably tip the scales in OKC's favor just because they had a reigning MVP in Russell Westbrook and Paul George and Carmelo Anthony. They had the big three. They had the playoff-tested guys on this team. And the Jazz really, yes, they played very well down the stretch. They finished the season strong since Gobert came back, but not a whole lot of playoff experience on that roster. And not a whole lot of collective experience. Just flat-out experience, because the team had a lot of changes right around the trade deadline. And yet, here we are. Westbrook, for all the talk he did after Game 3, a dud performance for the most part. I mean, when you're talking about the scope of what we can see from Russell Westbrook in the playoffs, we still haven't seen that iconic Russell Westbrook goes nuts game. We're four games in, and this series, I mean, yeah, we're going back to OKC, but this might be over in five. The Thunder just looked so disheartened and disinterested and outmatched in that game. Outmatched and, again, outcoached. It's crazy. Absolutely crazy to think about the fact that the first team to make their way, to punch their ticket to the second round, were the New Orleans Pelicans sweeping the favored Blazers. And here we are talking about, yeah, the Sixers are up 3-1 on Miami. I think most people anticipated that, as inexperienced as they are, just so good. And you have the Rockets up 3-1 on Minnesota. I don't think anybody would be really surprised if we learned that that would be where that series stood after four games. Maybe surprised that it wasn't a sweep. But these Utah Jazz are a lot of fun to watch. They remind me of some really high-quality Greg Popovich Spurs teams, and the way that they just play team basketball. They move the ball very well. They move off the ball. Ricky Rubio is not some score-first sensation point guard like his counterpoint in OKC, but he's a smart point guard. And how have I not even said the name Donovan Mitchell yet? Oh my gosh. This kid, through four games, his first four career playoff games, trails only three names as far as total points scored. That's 110 points through his first four playoff games. And that kid was making big plays late in that game. Had a big dagger three towards the end when OKC kind of made a little bit of a run towards the middle end parts of the fourth quarter. Mitchell is just phenomenal. Honestly, his confidence, his composure are perhaps most impressive about him. But then physically, athletically, and his skills on the court, his body control and his ability to finish through contact at his size, honestly, I got to say, and we'll be talking about this guy in just a minute, reminds me of a young Derrick Rose. It really does. Think about all of the teams that are kicking themselves for not taking Donovan Mitchell, who I'm not going to get into the whole, does Ben Simmons qualify as a rookie? Is he a redshirt rookie? Is he technically a sophomore? That whole debate. Ben Simmons, in his own right, has had a phenomenal season. He's probably going to win Rookie of the Year, and I don't really have a problem with that. But wow. Watch out, world. Donovan Mitchell. This kid can ball. We got to take a quick break when we come back on Locked On Bulls. We'll talk about that other first-round game from last night, the Rockets in Minnesota. And then we will talk further about that, about two specific ex-Bulls, current Timberwolves, Derrick Rose and Jimmy Butler. You're listening to Locked On Bulls on the Locked On Podcast Network. Stick around. Welcome back to Locked On Bulls. Matt Peck hanging out with you here on Tuesday, April 24th, as we are in the midst of probably the most exciting group of first-round playoff series we've seen in some time. Certainly better than last year. And we touched in that previous segment on the unexpected and entertaining 3-1 commanding lead that the Jazz have after last night's game in Salt Lake. Now let's talk about the Minnesota Timberwolves, who, to their credit, played the Rockets pretty evenly for three of four quarters last night. Quarters 1, 2, and 4, pretty darn even. Quarter three, however. Quarter three is when all NBA fans were reminded that if James Harden and the Rockets feel like it, they can drop 50 points on you in a quarter. 50 points in a quarter. By the way, saw this on Twitter last night after that happened. Only the second team ever in NBA history to drop 50 points in a single playoff quarter. The 61-62 Lakers were the only other team to do that. Fun stat for you there. I mean, James Harden was... People all of a sudden, NBA Twitter was like, oh my gosh, here comes dud playoff version of James Harden. Here comes crappy playoff choking version of James Harden, because he started, I believe, 0 for 7 in the first half. And then whatever it was that happened at halftime, whether it was Coach Mike D'Antoni or James Harden or Chris Paul or whatever happened in that Rockets locker room at halftime, they said, no, we're not about to let this, no offense to Tibbs and his crew, completely overmatched and less skilled team bring us into a 2-2 tie going back to Houston. No way. That's not happening. This Timberwolves team, despite Tom Thibodeau being at the helm, has been defensively challenged all season long. And the Rockets, even against a good defense, if they execute to the peak of their abilities, can put crazy points on anybody. Harden had 20-something points in the quarter. I think he hit, you know, six threes in the quarter, something crazy. I think the Rockets collectively hit 9 three-pointers, 27 points on threes, just on threes in one single quarter. And that was it. The Wolves made a little bit of a pushback in the fourth, but the hole was so deep from that onslaught of offense that the Rockets put on them in the third quarter that, I mean, regardless of what Tom Thibodeau tried in that fourth, there was just no coming back from that. So that was the story. It was a game decided in one quarter when we all saw the best version of the Rockets offense and what that can be. But before that happened, the story of the first half was Derrick Rose. Derrick Rose, who, after a tumultuous single season in New York that was marred by off-the-court issues and an AWOL absence from the team, and then a free agency somewhere where really nobody was looking to give him a multi-year deal of any kind or even a substantial one-year deal, ends up signing a one-year, $2 million deal with the Cavs to be a veteran piece for their bench. That doesn't work out. He gets traded to Utah. Utah lets him go. And here we are towards the tail end of the regular season, and there's footage on Twitter of Derrick Rose shooting hoops by himself with some unnamed, you know, workout partner shagging his rebounds at Cleveland State. And then Tibbs calls. Good old Tibbs. One of the people who always stood up for D. Rose, as media, fans, everybody in Chicago started to question his commitment to the game, started to question the future of Derrick Rose and the Bulls, whether or not he was a guy that we still wanted around. Tibbs, until the day he got fired by the Bulls front office, Tibbs always defended Rose. And Tibbs said, you know what, I think our team could use Derrick. A lot of skepticism there. Heck, when Jordan and I had on a couple of various Timberwolves guys as guests on Locked On Bulls, when those rumors were being, you know, tossed around, and even after they made it official and brought him on, Jordan and I expressed our skepticism that Derrick Rose could be helpful to this Minnesota Timberwolves team. I mean, when you experience the entire trajectory of what Derrick Rose meant to that, to this fan base and this organization, it's hard. And then what you saw in New York for a season, and what you saw in Cleveland for bits and pieces of a season, it's hard not to be skeptical. You'd be crazy not to be skeptical. And meanwhile, everybody in Minnesota, all those Minnesota Timberwolves fans and those, you know, those Tyus Jones stands are freaking out saying, oh my gosh, I can't believe Tibbs is getting Derrick Rose more minutes than Tyus Jones. He's washed up. He's useless. This is ridiculous. Bleacher Report had some article that came out a couple weeks ago saying, you know, Tom Thibodeau's faith in Derrick Rose is ruining their chances against Houston. And yeah, Derrick Rose, in games one and two of this series, not fantastic. He was a net minus, but most everybody was in those first two games. But even still, in those first two games, he put up 16 points in game one on 7 of 14 shooting, 4 assists, a couple of rebounds. In game two, 9 points, 4 of 9 shooting, not terrible. In games 3 and 4, a win, and then last night a loss, Derrick Rose was a collective plus 19 for the Minnesota Timberwolves. 17 points in each game. 8 of 16 in game 3, 7 of 11 in game 4. And get this, for the series, Rose is shooting 52% overall and has hit 5 of 7 three-point attempts. Rose isn't even a 30% career three-point shooter, just under 30%. He's shooting 70% from downtown in this series. And it's not just the three-pointers, which from Rose are never expected, certainly not a guarantee. But it was, and I know all Bulls fans are with me here, and you might get mad when the broadcasters, Kevin Harlan and Reggie Miller, P.S., how maddening was that Reggie Rose stuff all night? I was tweeting, I was about to lose my damn mind, but they kept saying vintage Rose. And a lot of people on Twitter say, I hate that phrase. It does injustice to just how good MVP Rose was. Because anything we've seen from him since then, even if it's a quick flash or a drive or a bucket, it's not the same. But there were a couple of drives that Derrick Rose had in the first half of that game last night that are about as close to vintage Rose as you can get without getting in trouble from people who say, don't use that phrase, it's bogus. And you know exactly the drives I'm talking about. He gets a rebound, he jets. You see that initial burst of speed. Rose pushes the pace. The Rockets defense doesn't get set. And on multiple occasions, when at not one, but two Houston defenders who were still backpedaling, made a tough contested layup. Left hand, right hand, reverse, with contact. That insane combination of speed and power and body control and finishing at the rim that we all fell in love with when Derrick Rose was 21, 22 years old. Yeah, he's fought through a lot of injuries. What, 3-4 knee surgeries, bone spurs earlier this season, ankle here, meniscus there. All of these injuries, and he is not the same athlete he was at 29 that he was at 22. Obviously not. But you saw on multiple occasions last night, holy crap, Derek still has that step. Derek still has the ability to do some of those things. Has the ability to make some of those drives and finishing with those contorting body layups that you say, not many people in this league can do that. And that was the story of the first half. James Harden was chucking up bricks and Derrick Rose looked like the best player on the court. And I think for a lot of Bulls fans, regardless of whether or not you got sick of Rose and were part of the faction of people chasing him out of town at the end, even if you counted yourself among those, and I don't. I think it was time for Rose to leave, but I certainly wasn't throwing crap at him as he left. Defended him longer than most. Even if you were one of the people who was so sick of Rose by the time he played his final game in a Bulls jersey, you had to see yourself smiling at that last night. Chicago kid who meant so much to this fan base and so much to the Bulls organization after the tumultuous couple of years he's had. On the court, off the court, everybody doubting him, everybody saying he's washed up and done. It's pretty special to see that. Which leads me to this. There was something on the Bulls blog of Fansided, Pippin Ain't Easy, yesterday, the day before, highlighting Derrick Rose's surprisingly decent performance off the Wolves bench in this first round playoff series. Suggesting, here's the headline. Would the Chicago Bulls be crazy to sign Derrick Rose? Derrick Rose is an impending free agent this summer. Here's the short answer. Yeah. Yeah, they'd be crazy. The author of this particular column brings up certain points like Rose being a more reliable veteran bench guy to lead their second unit than, say, Campaign, who, according to John Paxson, the team feels good about as the backup point guard moving forward, bringing veteran leadership, bringing that scoring ability that we've seen in this Wolves-Rockets series, saying, hey, not so crazy. The Bulls could probably get him on a small, you know, close to veteran minimum deal, just like the contract he signed with the Cavs last summer. Not happening. I appreciate you bringing that idea to the surface, because I'm sure I even saw on Twitter last night all sorts of Rose stands, and oh my God, there are a lot of them out there on Twitter saying, bring him back. Like, bring him back to Chicago. Bring him home. This guy, he's still Rose. He can still play. Going to bring us back to playoff relevance. Guys, let's not get ahead of ourselves. It is endearing, heartwarming to see Rose playing significant positive minutes in a playoff series after everything. I don't think anybody really was confident that we'd ever see that again. But too much damage has been done there, and there are, no pun intended, too many scars that exist in the relationship between Derrick Rose and the Chicago Bulls. I'm sure everybody in this Bulls organization wishes him well, from the Reinsdorfs on down. But Derrick Rose is still an injury risk. Missed a big chunk of this season, was contemplating his NBA future because of some bone spurs that knocked him out of action earlier this season. This is a great little mini episode of Derrick Rose basketball phenom that we're getting in this first round series. It's great. It's entertaining. It's fun. I'm glad it's happening. But the injury risk is still there. And the Bulls and Fred Hoiberg at the helm are still trying to get younger, more athletic. And despite a fun couple of drives from Derrick Rose in this series that look pretty familiar to a younger, more athletic version of himself, signing a veteran Rose, a 30-year-old next season Rose, to be your backup point guard in Fred Hoiberg's system, I'm sorry, the pieces just don't fit. And this Pippen Ain't Easy author also brings up the idea that, you know, Derrick Rose would be a great veteran leader in the locker room. And while it's true that the Bulls might be losing out on their veteran leaders, Robin Lopez and Justin Holiday, sometime soon, and will, you know, maybe need somebody to step in like that, let's be real. A, we want the core of LaVine and Dunn and Markkanen to become the leaders of this team. Probably Chris Dunn as the point guard, mostly. And B, I don't know if I said one or A, but we're going to go with B. Derrick Rose was never a leader. That's never been his shtick. That's not his thing. He's not a leader. Has never attested to be, has never claimed to be. He's not a leader. A lot of the problems that were going on in that Bulls locker room at the tail end of the Tibbs era and the beginning of the Fred Hoiberg era had to do with a lack of clarity around whose team it was. And why was that always a case of whose team it was? Is it Derek's team, or is it Jimmy's team? It's because Derrick Rose has never been a vocal leader. So I don't really know that that's going to help you as you're rebuilding this Bulls team. He's a soft-spoken guy. He doesn't want to be the veteran leader of that team. I wouldn't if I'm Derrick Rose. He signed with Cleveland because he still wanted to play on a competitive team, and no offense to these rebuilding Bulls, but next year, that's the other thing that this author at Pippen Ain't Easy in this column brings up, is that he sees the Bulls being a playoff team next year. I'm not so sure of that either. And I think if Derrick Rose's performance in what will likely be a one-and-done playoff series appearance, even if it's just Game 5 in Houston and then it's over, if Rose does some nice things off the bench in that game and collectively you have this five-game package of, wow, Derrick Rose actually looked like he can play, look like he can be a solid veteran bench piece for a team that's trying to make a run in the playoffs. That might actually lead to Derrick Rose getting some offers this summer. Not crazy offers. Obviously not max money, not even close. Maybe not even a multi-year deal, but perhaps a lucrative one-year deal that's maybe a little bit more than $2 million. Somewhere other than Chicago, where he sees himself as being a key role player on a team that's got a chance at making a playoff run next year. So I just don't see it. We got to take one more quick time out here on Locked On Bulls as we come back. A quick chat about the other former Bull who is playing in Minnesota. Well, heck, I guess there's a bunch of them. But the other prominent one, Mr. Jimmy Buckets. You're listening to Locked On Bulls on the Locked On Podcast Network. Stick around. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Locked On Bulls. Matt Peck hanging out with you on Tuesday, April 24th. And we just left off talking about a hypothetical Derrick Rose coming back home to Chicago situation. And I said, hey, fun thought. Let's enjoy Derrick Rose and his surprisingly pleasant playoff performance with Minnesota, but not happening. Just doesn't seem to make a lot of sense as far as the pieces that exist in this puzzle that the Bulls are trying to put together in this rebuild. So then came this article, and I'm pretty sure this came out today, Tuesday morning. You know him, Mr. Joe Cowley of the Chicago Sun-Times, and his salacious headlines that hit Twitter every few days. Jimmy Butler back in a Bulls uniform someday? Not as far-fetched as it sounds. That's the headline from Cowley of the Sun-Times today, who spoke with Jimmy Butler, who is trying like hell to keep his Timberwolves alive. Might we see a epic performance from Jimmy in Game 5? A do-or-die situation? Could be fun. But Cowley and Jimmy were talking about his first season in Minnesota and the work and the tough guy stuff and the reason that Tibbs wanted to bring Jimmy to Minnesota, and that it's the physical and mental toughness. And that all makes plenty of sense. Cowley theorizes that maybe these young guys that Jimmy was brought in to mentor, the Karl Anthony Towns, the Andrew Wiggins, just don't really have that mental toughness. And that it's been frustrating for Butler. And that's something that he was frustrated with in Chicago, working with some of these younger Bulls players. I have this crazy, insane work ethic, and I think everybody should have that same crazy, insane work ethic that I do. And when I don't see that same level of work ethic from people, it makes me mad. Heck, that was reported to be one of the biggest reasons that there was a rift between Jimmy and Derek when they were, whose team is it in here in Chicago? So Cowley's hypothesizing here that maybe the Minnesota Timberwolves aren't really the team for Jimmy long term. That despite the fact that they just ended their 14-year playoff drought in the high-octane Western Conference, they don't really project to be a championship contender. Sure, they probably would have won more games and finished possibly top four as a top four seed, as opposed to squeaking in as the eighth in a winner-take-all 82nd game of the regular season, had Jimmy not gotten hurt and missed more than a month of crucial regular season games. Perhaps. Would that have really changed their likelihood of, say, making it to the Western Conference Finals, or dare say, Finals? I don't know about that. I don't know if Jimmy being healthy for a full season would have changed Minnesota's likelihood of getting past, say, Houston or Golden State. I'm not saying that. So Cowley's saying, Jimmy, he really wants to win. It's all about winning. And he has this quote from Butler in his column that he put out today. This is Jimmy Butler, quote, "Decisions I make, the money, my contract, all that will handle itself. I don't ever worry about my money. I already have enough money for the rest of my life, so money is never the issue. It's all about winning." Period. End quotation. Enter tab. Joe Cowley. That's why a return to the Bulls isn't so far-fetched. Then he goes on to talk about the remaining positive relationship between Jimmy Butler and Bulls president Michael Reinsdorf, and said that, hey, the Butler-Reinsdorf relationship is still great. Gar Foreman? Not so much. But the Reinsdorfs, yeah, Jimmy loves the Reinsdorfs, and they love him. Jimmy also had this quote included: I love the city of Chicago. I love the Reinsdorfs. I'm forever grateful for them and taking a chance on me, allowing me to become the player I am today. It's incredible to me that I got to hoop in a Bulls jersey. I got to play in the house that Jordan built, that Pippen played, all that stuff. That's because of the Reinsdorfs. This is still a quote from Jimmy. If the time comes where I say, you know what, I do want to end this thing in a Bulls jersey, I think that would be amazing. But it's all about being wanted and winning. And then Cowley ends it with a joke about Gar Foreman, which he posed to Jimmy, and he said Jimmy laughed and limped away. So there that is. It's all about being wanted and winning. Did Jimmy Butler feel wanted about a year ago when the Bulls traded him, one of the arguably top 10 best two-way players in the game, in his prime? Bulls constantly said, we value Jimmy, we value Jimmy, we value Jimmy. Never really said, we want to build around Jimmy. We value Jimmy, never. We're never trading Jimmy. We're going to build around him. Never said that. That clearly rubbed Jimmy the wrong way. And Jimmy must have felt quite unwanted when the Bulls traded him away on draft night. So it's all about being wanted and winning, according to Jimmy. Being wanted, that's still a big question mark. Winning, not right now. So Cowley, in this conversation with Butler, is talking hypothetically about a return to the Bulls someday. He does, however, talk about the fact that Butler is going to be, possibly, if he takes that option, a free agent just one summer from now. He's got one more year on his deal and can become a free agent in 2019 if he so chooses. And he's talking about how maybe Minnesota isn't the place where Jimmy wants to stay. So there's kind of a two-faced game here being played by Cowley as far as what kind of timeline he's suggesting. Well, Jimmy might not be long for Minnesota because there's questions there. They might not be contenders, and Jimmy, he wants to be wanted and he wants to win, and a year from now he might leave. That's not the same as suggesting that a year from now the Bulls are going to say, hey, Jimmy, why don't you come on back? A year from now, is Fred Hoiberg still the coach? Because if so, boom, end of conversation, not happening. Jimmy saying, they chose Fred over me. Hey, credit to them. I get it. Fine, whatever. But they chose Fred over me. So as long as Fred's in town, Jimmy's not coming back. That's plain and simple. There are two different timelines that are kind of being muddied together in this piece by Cowley. Hey, Jimmy might leave Minnesota next summer, and he's open to coming back to the Bulls. No way. No way in hell is Jimmy Butler going to be back in a Bulls jersey for the start of the 2019-2020 season. I'll tell you right now. It's fun to theorize and to discuss, and it's honestly, it's nice to hear those things from Jimmy saying, hey, someday when I'm ready to have my last run, you know, when it's, what did he say? I do want to, if it comes time where I say, you know what, I do want to end this thing in a Bulls jersey. End this thing meaning his career? Retire a Bull, come back to where it all began? Just kind of like we saw Devin Hester and Matt Forte earlier this week at Hallis Hall retiring as Chicago Bears. Fun scene. Hugs all around. Great. Wonderful. But if you think that Jimmy Butler still, and he can say that stuff about money, and for the most part, I believe him. I believe he's already, with this max contract he got from Chicago, and made more than enough money than he'll ever need, and that's probably not his top priority right now. But if you want to talk about Jimmy leaving Minnesota because he doesn't see them as his best chance to win a championship, I'm guessing in the summer of 2019, there will be at least a few teams out there who are in a better, closer position for championship contention than the Bulls will be where Jimmy Butler can go, feel wanted, get paid handsomely, and not have to deal with the ugly past of the Bulls kicking him out of town. Maybe someday when Jimmy Butler's 38 and ready to hang him up, we'll get to see something like a one-season reunion tour. Heck, Scottie Pippen did it. Most people forget about that. What was I think it was 2003, 2004, Scottie's final season in the NBA. Freshly sporting a headband this time around. Great. Welcome back, Scottie. Here's your keys to the United Center. You're officially a human mascot slash team ambassador, et cetera, et cetera. Scottie's still serving in that position today. And it started with him being welcomed back with open arms. Same might happen for Butler 8 years from now. But for Callie to suggest that Jimmy might wanting to leave Minnesota next summer equals Jimmy coming back to the Bulls in 2019, it's misguided. It's misleading. It's irresponsible. And those are my thoughts on that. That will do it for this episode of Locked On Bulls. Thanks, as always, to our loyal listeners, Bulls Nation. We're getting closer to the NBA drafts. Exciting things are happening. In the meantime, we've got awesome NBA playoff action happening. If you are just a fervent Sea Red Nation fan who isn't watching these NBA playoffs, as I sign off, let me urge you to watch these NBA playoffs. There are exciting games in every single one of these series happening. So much fun stuff is happening in the NBA playoffs right now. Even if you are just a Bulls fan and not an NBA fan, I urge you to watch because there is some fun stuff going on. We got Boston and Milwaukee tonight tied 2-2. That tips off 6 o'clock Central Time. The Sixers close out the Miami Heat. That one's in Philly for game 5, Philly up 3-1. That tip-off is at 7 o'clock Central Time. And then the late game tonight, the Warriors try to close out the Spurs. Tip-off 9:30 Central Time. Watch these games. They have been so entertaining. And there's something to keep us going in these quiet times while we hang around and wait for that draft lottery on May 15th. So for my partner, Jordan Malley, who hopefully we will have back tomorrow, this is Matt Peck saying thanks for listening. As a reminder, follow us on the Twitter machine at LockedOnBulls, at Bulls_Peck, at Jordan C. Malley. Hit us up on that text and voicemail line. We'll do some mailbags tomorrow, 331-979-1369. Matt Peck saying enjoy your Tuesday afternoon and evening, Bulls Nation. Watch those playoff games tonight, and we'll talk to you tomorrow. Peace out.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com, part of FanRag Sports.